Podcast. This is episode 60. I'm your host, Chris Moore. Today, here with me is
Jimmy Trammell,
Anna Codudi,
John Fanley.
All right, and first off, let's talk about conventions that are coming to Tulsa. I believe up next we have the Walker Stalker Con. Jimmy, you want to give us the deets on that?
Your question is, what is a Walker Stalker Con? It's a horror and sci-fi convention, but with a huge focus on The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
20 of the guests are Walking Dead actors.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have Rick Grimes, we don't have the kid, we don't have Norman Reedus, but we got a lot of other folks who are from that franchise, and I'm curious how it's going to be, because it's not a quote-unquote a pop culture con or a comic con, it's a
mm-hmm.
Walker Stalker Con. Are you guys all Walking Dead people, or no?
Fell off.
I'm a gnome.
Never gave it a shot.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting for this group.
Jason was our Powers was the walking dude, right? No, the walking dude.
Well, James and Jason are like the two biggest ones, and I believe like others in newsroom. Mike Strain is a huge.
Oh, is he really?
Dude.
I didn't know.
Yes,
that.
I'm a huge disappointment to my boss.
But I've only experienced mainly the trade paperbacks and the comics. Mm-hmm. I've not watched barely any of the television shows, but the books are fantastic, in my opinion.
And that's one thing I want to talk about. Probably what else will be involved in this convention.
Cosplay?
I'm guessing cosplay.
They're going to have a cosplay contest on Saturday, but I'm guessing it's not quite happy, cheery superheroes. But
no, lots of bloody makeup.
Yes.
And
yes.
Like, show off your work with glue, spirit glue and stuff like
Friday
that.
Friday the 13th, Part 25, you know, whatever else they could come. It'll be interesting. It'll be an educational experience, I think, to see what this con is like compared to Wizard World and some of the other things.
Well, it's just nice for our nerd community, whatever that is. If you're nerdy for horror movies, you're still a kind of nerd, and so if you're going to support, you know, a local convention bringing some celebrity guests here, I really hope that it does well for the organizers.
When you look at the other cons they have, it's like London.
Walker Stalker specifically?
Yeah, like London, Atlanta, Tulsa, you know, so that's the club world.
Where's it being held at?
At the Cox Business Center.
Okay. And there's
August 5th and 6th.
Okay. And I'm guessing there's going to probably be some. There's been big news, like pretty much in like the undead world right now. I mean, you had the passing of George Romero, big influence in that community, and also during, I believe it was right after Comic-Con, Kirkman announced he's going to finally end The Walking Dead.
Yeah. False.
I thought he said he was.
He tweeted after the fact, like, don't fall for the clickbait. It's not going to end.
Oh, he said it's not going to end. Okay.
But apparently he said something to lead people to believe it was going to end.
Okay. So I guess only one of his is going to end with Invincible, but not Walking Dead. So that will I was about to say, it's like, seems like the show might run out of leg room after a while. It's like we're going to go in the fan fiction territory after a while.
If you go back and read his original comments in the first trade paperback, he says the thing I hated about the zombie movies is when they ended.
Uh-huh.
He said, and this is something that continued forever. The story would just go on.
But he also said that, like, this will go on just as long
as
Rick and Carl are alive. Right. And so my only guess is it's going to have to be Rick that probably, like, if he finally decides to end it, it's going to be Rick that's going to be the one that bites it. It's going to be Carl pretty much learning everything he's learned from watching his dad during this world. And that's how I see it ending.
I have no response to that.
All right, then I guess we can move on to our topic of Game of Thrones. What did everyone think about this past episode?
I just freaked out. I was, like, shaking with excitement because the writing from, like, the beginning was just so amazing. Mm. It had the arrival in Dragonstone of the party responding to Daenerys' request and getting Jon Snow back together with Tyrion and that moment where they're standing on the beach talking about, well, you've gotten some scars. I'm like, Jon has scars too! You just can't see him!
Yeah. No, the meeting of, obviously, Jon and Dany was great. Tyrion specifically had some awesome dialogue this episode where he was constantly trying to, like, play the mediator, and also, like, Tyrion's had a bunch of failures the past couple episodes, like, major strategic failures that have
everything caused, at this point caused has
multiple
failed.
Characters to get killed, and so that you know, you can see that's been sort of weighing on him because he viewed himself as this great strategic. Like when I finally get into power, I'm going to show them all what for. And now Danny listened to him, followed his strategy, and it has backfired literally 100% at this point.
The Targaryen alliance is pretty much they're 0-3 at this point.
Yeah.
Right now.
Arguably, though, harkening back to what is the issue, a lack of imagination when it comes to being, you know, the evil doers. And so you've got Olenna telling us, well, you know, I failed because I couldn't even fathom the depths to which Cersei could sink. And then you've got Tyrion, who can't imagine an idiot play. You know? So, as successful as it could be.
And it seems super, I mean, this might come off as incredibly superficial, but it seems like the bait and switch of them attacking Casterly Rock and Jaime just not being there, just like I feel like that's not how it's gonna play out in the book if the book ever happens. But I love that it was a callback to Jaime learning the lesson of what Robb Stark did to him in the Whispering Woods.
Hey, tell me more about that.
So that was the season 2 and book 2 were so long ago that I have it was even end of season 1. No, it had to have been season 2. Season 2 books were really long ago. But basically it was Robb pulled a bait and switch. Like, Robb, when the armies were going to meet, and Robb's army basically pulled a bait and switch and came and basically flanked the crap out of Jaime's army, and that's how Jaime got captured. And that was the turning point in the War of the Five Kings, which is then why they had to resort to just straight up murdering Robb Stark.
Yeah,
it was close to beating him in the field of battle because he started winning battles and started.
That was like pretty much a good point. I really love that point from season 2. He says, what happened? He says, we slew 2,000 men today. Oh, where was Robb Stark? He wasn't here. He was gone somewhere else with his 10,000 men.
Yeah.
And he ended up capturing Jaime. And I like that thing where he says, like, I've learned pretty much from your losing. And Olenna says, you've probably learned a lot then.
there's like that whole part in the book of season 2 is great because you hear about it all in secondhand, because none of those characters are point of view characters at the time. You just hear about what had happened. But there's this great thing where when Jaime essentially figures out that he's been caught and that he's not, his entire army was taken from the rear or taken from the sides, and he's losing, that what he does is he just basically draws his sword and just tries to get to Robb Stark to kill him. And literally, all of, like, the Northmen are throwing themselves in front of Jaime so that, like, he just slow him down because he's just trying to cut his way to get to Robb, and eventually he gets taken down. But it's, like, something like multiple, like, of, like, the Northern Bannermen, like lords are killed by Jaime and his just trying to cut his way and get to Robb, just because he's like, well, if I'm going down, I'm taking him with me. And so it's a great thing. So it was a major character moment for Jaime, and it's, I think, somewhat downplayed in the show, and for them to kind of make a callback to that, even though I still think it's a really quick bait and switch to do it for the, like, I feel like the book probably won't play out that way. I thought that was a great scene.
Well, I thought it fit really nicely with how they introduce when the Iron Bank of Braavos comes to visit Queen Cersei for the first time and have that very frank conversation. She says something like, you're my honored guest for 2 weeks. Within that fortnight, you will be paid back. I didn't think too much of it. I thought she was just blowing smoke, but I mean, the idea of targeting Highgarden.
Yeah, it's the smartest
two birds.
Yeah. It's the smartest play for them. Highgarden was the one that was giving them all the money, because, I mean, Tyrion, he got Highgarden to pay for that royal wedding themselves, so they had all the gold. Now they're in a position of weakness right now. They know that they are at Highgarden. They're pretty much, they have to transfer all that gold from Highgarden back to King's Landing. So right now, that convoy is probably going to be attacked.
What do you mean King's Landing? Isn't it going to Braavos?
Well, it has to go to King's Landing to get back to Braavos.
So there's a funny thing that I saw got pointed out on Twitter. She mentioned that, you know, the Iron Bank loves the slave trade because they've made money off it.
Yeah.
Well,
he didn't seem to have too much response to that.
Bravos in the books is abjectly anti-slavery. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of like a, and maybe you can't, because Bravos is a city that was made of free slaves that basically freed themselves and formed the city of Bravos. So Bravos is not a slave trade city. So it being the, and that maybe just means, and then you could then argue that, hey, just because it's the Iron Bank of Bravos doesn't mean they don't profit from slave trade elsewhere.
It's like they profit from slave trade, but they don't deal anyway, in slaves themselves.
That was a funny contradiction that someone pointed out on Twitter. That it's probably not going to be that argument.
I don't know. It seems seeing the throne room interaction between Jon Snow and Dany, it kind of harkens back for some of the reasons I do not like Dany so much. She's a bit too pretentious for herself at the moment. I mean, you see her going through all, like, you see, like, her her assistant going through all the names that she has. She's like, Breaker of Chains, Queen of the Andales, Mother of Dragons, and then you just had Davos go,
This is Jon Snow.
I read someone describe Dany's character currently as hollow. The character hollow. Feels very hollow. Like
it
like,
kind of is.
And I don't know if I agree with that. I see where they're going with it, but I think you can make the argument that Dany is playing the role that she thinks she's supposed to be playing of conqueror.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I think like it, you know, saying oh she's just you know that's just a bad character now. It's like, no, come on, like I don't know.
And I feel like a lot of that kind of falls to poor Emilia Clarke, who if you read the message boards, I mean, the fans are just not down with Emilia Clarke's interpretation of a character who is so beloved in the books for her strength. She comes off like pretty petulant. And I thought you liked this man. And the 5 minutes he's been there, he's refused to call me queen. And it's like, oh my gosh, whining to your assistant in front of the guy, like,
yeah.
But that's the thing. Dany is so petulant in the Dance of Dragons, the most recent book that came out in 2012 or whatever. She is a petulant little girl who makes rash decisions, and the whole book is about her growing as a leader. Uh-huh. And the show can do that. The show can, you know, say, hey, she's growing as someone that's conquering these lands. So I don't know. I feel bad. I feel bad for Emilia Clarke.
And that's the point. You want to see a character grow and everything, and certainly her journey has been one of the more amazing ones, as we got as a reminder in that sort of pissing contest in the throne room of who has affected their people more between Dany and Jon. But I think
Which Davos wanted to point out is like he's died for his people, but Jon quickly says don't tell her that.
But on the other side of the spectrum, Jon, as a character in the books, is remarkably humorless, like especially as currently, and I think Kit Harington has been given a bit more, has been given afforded the privilege of having a bit more levity to the role. He gets to smile and crack a few jokes with them, and I feel like, I would not saddle any of this at the feet of Miss Clarke or Mrs. Clarke. I feel like it might just be poor writing. I don't know.
Or the way that we're supposed to, because this is a Song of Ice and Fire, not one or the other. And getting them together, as Melisandre reminded us at the top of that cliff,
which was so hokey. I thought her saying that was so
tacky. It seemed like a goodbye, didn't it? I mean, it I did. Felt like we're not really going to see Melisandre until season 8 now.
It did seem like a goodbye from it.
The idea that she has to get with her, not get with, she has to partner with her, what we now know, brother, half brother.
They have different
mothers.
They have different mothers.
No, that would be her aunt, I believe. I think it's her aunt.
Brother, half. Rhaegar.
Rhaegar's her brother.
Jon is the illegitimate son of the prince. Dany is the daughter of the king.
You needed to put illegitimate in air quotes because we do not know if he was actually an illegitimate son or not.
He's still considered illegitimate because they were not married.
We do not know if they were not married.
These are all fan theories.
But we know nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jon Snow, we know nothing.
Anyway, I think them getting in the same vicinity is going to improve both of them greatly. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No,
what I don't understand is, how come no one believes any one of the mythical things that happened? This was like one of the same issues I had with like the ending of True Blood, where people didn't believe fairies or anything existed anymore, and it's kind of like,
and yet you don't raise your eyebrows at like stone men, dragons.
Yes, it's like we live in a world where smoke babies have been brought forth, where everyone believes we have dragons that fly in the air. We've seen actual people change faces on us in a matter of seconds, and you can't believe that something of dead people rising that we all know occurred in that world, but no one wants to believe anymore.
A quick point of clarification.
Right. Thank you, Ainley.
The dragons obviously are they have a very history past with so because the dragons conquered Westeros 300 years ago. They know like dragons are known like
but the, no one believed that the dragons were back at first.
Right, right, but everyone knows that dragons are a part of history.
Uh-huh.
The White Walkers are in the books a myth, like a myth. That's a, they're considered
if you're
like
not
a
northerner.
It's like it's even
among
northerners.
Even among it's the boogeymen.
Yeah, they're boogeymen.
I don't think they're boogeymen anymore because
well, they aren't anymore. But like the last time White Walkers were seen was something like some astronomical point, amount of time like 10,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. So like they are past the point of legend at this point.
So those Maester Scrolls are long rotted.
Yes. Yeah. So like I feel like it's kind of like saying. I don't know. I feel like the analogy of why do people believe in dragons but not believe in White Walkers? Yeah, I think you're missing a key point of reference here.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like saying why don't people believe in like I don't know. I'm not going to try and come up with an analogy
for our day and age. But yeah. I get it.
But I still think it's hard for them not to believe this, especially when you have something that the Night Watch even exists anymore, that something like that has not been disbanded.
Excellent point. But the Night Watch, in as history grew,
are we talking about the books anymore, or are we going on the show now?
Well, this is both. Because the Night's Watch, you know, if you watch the season one, all the people in the Night's Watch, all they care about is keeping the wildlings out.
Uh-huh.
They don't get
that
they,
is their
they,
new
they,
job.
They don't. Yeah, right. That's as history, as the years went on, that's what the Night's Watch job turned into,
uh-huh.
was keeping the free folk or the wildlings away.
That's a good point.
Not worrying about, even though they always had three horn blasts means
whites.
Yeah, which would be, so, I absolutely understand your point. Moving on.
Speaking of the Skrulls, Samwell Tarly is a wizard
did
now.
Did he in one evening cure Jorah Mormont?
Yes, he did. It seems like he did. And I just love that after the point, he says, come here. He says, like, many maesters have healing chains have failed at this procedure, yet you didn't. How did you? And he said, I simply read the words and followed the instructions.
So matter of fact.
I was expecting like a star with a rainbow with the more you know to fly over him. Like literacy.
He says, remember kids, read.
I mean, yeah, it makes sense. Sam does not, he knows he's not a maester, he knows he's not better than anybody else, and he relies on the wisdom of other people, and other people let their big heads get in the way, so I can see where he would succeed curing Grayscale where others had failed. Mm. So, and thank God, because I've been dying for Jorah to get back to Dany. Mm.
And I just love kind of those moments. You've seen, like, in old fantasy novels and, like, other literature, it's just, like, you have these people that says, like, when they meet certain heroes, they said, like, oh, you're the son of such and such, and, like, I owe your father pretty much a blood debt. And you actually see this happen. He says, my name is Samwell Tarly, a member of the Night's Watch, under the command of Jorah Mormont. You are Jorah Mormont, the son of the commander. You're not dying today. It was kind of like, I am fulfilling an oath. He says, this man has saved my life more times than I can remember. The least I can do is save his only son.
There are some people in this show, some characters who are just so altruistic and good that when George kills them, as he inevitably will, it's going to break my heart. When Davos made that speech about Jon, he was so impassioned, and it made me think of his dedication to Stannis and what he saw Shireen go through. I was just like, there is no better man in the entirety of Westeros than Davos the Onion Knight, and he is going to die, and it's going to break my heart.
It's going to be horrible, and it's going to happen.
It's like, even
did you see how, like, he kind of took that lob from Tyrion when he first, we were on opposite sides of Blackwater Bay. Isn't that when Davos lost his son?
Yeah, it was.
So
that
he
was.
Took that pretty well.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. That's a good point. It's
like,
think about that.
It's going to be sad probably when you see Davos died. It was it was devastating when, like, the old member of the Kingsguard died who went to go work for Danny. Yes. Like,
it's like that horrible alley fight.
It's just like, I always go back, it's like, of many things that we have seen, of many people, we've seen thousands and thousands of people die in this world. Only one person has died of old age.
Was Grey Worm in that fight in the alley?
Yeah, he was.
He somehow made it out.
Yeah, he's actually the one that killed... Bearson was about to get, like, his head chopped off, and he... Grey Worm was able to get up and stab the dude, mm-hmm. and then he collapsed, and then... I can't remember the character's name. Danny's... basically right-hand lady.
Missandei.
She nurtured Grey Worm back to health.
Well, they had to, because this is one of the happier love stories that we've been able to experience. And yeah. I mean, Grey Worm might be a eunuch, but two episodes ago, he sure seemed to know what to do.
Yes, he did.
So she threw him one before he had to go through the horror of making it all the way
to Castle.
And I think that was actually the first time we... ever saw Castle York. We've always heard about how important this position was for the Lannisters. It's like, it's pretty much their stronghold, and we've never seen it up until now. I was so anxious to finally see what Castle York looked like, and yes, it did look like a fortress.
And Highgarden. We'd never seen Highgarden before.
We did
either.
Not see Highgarden either, yes. Speaking of Highgarden, how that episode ended with Olena, amazing. Amazing. That is such a thrilling death scene. Like, even in her death, she still wins the day.
I mean, to me, she is the equivalent of the Dowager Countess on this show. Yeah. Elena has some really biting moments. Okay.
We'll get there. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Did you all know she's the one that killed Joffrey? Like,
yes. You knew she was the one. It was after the Purple Wedding happened, she sits down with her granddaughter, and she says, "Do you actually think I would let you marry beast, dear?"
I couldn't remember if that was just in books or in the show, if you knew that she was the one that...
Yeah,
damn the blink and you miss it moment.
Yeah,
okay.
You found out, like, she was a part of it.
Oh, so you did not know that she was the one that killed John. You just assumed it someone and...
I mean, I had read the books, Jonathan, but like you said, of the number of years, I actually was glad to start the show after having forgotten the books. So, no spoilers!
Yeah, like, I think, like, it was during one of, like, the season finales, you found out that it was a play with Olena, and also Littlefinger orchestrated the death of Joffrey as well, because she tells Sansa before she gets her on the boat.
Because then he kills the knight who was termed the drunkard.
Olena's last response to the name of the sword that was Joffrey's. We cannot say on a family podcast, but was fantastic.
Yeah. It was like a great callback to something someone else had once said about the fact that Joffrey had named his sword. Right? Because
Sandra
Clegane once said only blanks name their swords.
Yeah.
And then she says, "Well, would Joffrey name that sword?" Yeah, he was a blank, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So.
And how she just quickly says, like, "Okay, I know my time's up," and she just immediately grabs the goblet and just drinks. She says, "Okay, I'm about to die. Let's get everything on the table."
Yeah.
And stares daggers into Jaime, just knowing, "I've won this death." And
but do you not, after that conversation, I started thinking, and I don't know how much theory we want to talk, but something like a conversation with Olena, I think that Jaime is on a path of wondering why he is fighting so vehemently on this. And so
This is something, and I hate to be the dude that's constantly comparing the books to me, but this is something that a lot of people who have read the books and watched the show were unhappy with, was in the books at this point, you know, much for earlier than this point, Jaime was already very much separating, separating himself away from Cersei, and that had not happened in the show yet.
So yeah, I believe, one of the last somewhat interactions they had in the books was before Cersei had her trial, she asked it for trial by combat.
He
ripped up the request to come and hate, to come fight for her. He said, "No, I'm not going to do this."
So the fact that, yes, I absolutely agree. I think that I'm hoping to, because I think that was a major character moment for Jaime, for him to finally go, "No, this life that I've been living, this role I've been playing just isn't, this is not right."
I feel like it started with Brienne, you know? I think that he learned something about himself from that experience that he didn't know that he had in him, so.
Oh, also I want to bring up, Bran Stark, who has basically turned into Dr. Manhattan from, like, Watchmen now. He's like, sees all time flowing at the same time, apparently.
Yeah.
He says, I've seen the past, the present, the future, and it's all as one.
And it makes you apparently really unfun to hang out with. Yeah. He makes you wait to get away from him when she found out.
Yeah, he's just like, I saw you in that, you said you look lovely in that dress, and so she's like, I need to go back to the castle.
You realize what happened 10 minutes after that. How could you bring that up right now, Brian?
Yeah.
It's funny because, like...
I'm going to stay here for a little bit. It's, like, good.
Someone on Twitter, like framed it like it was a scene from, like, Fallout. Like, Fallout 3. Uh-huh. All the word bubbles that you had to choose from. It was like, Sans, I need to tell you this. Sans, I need to tell you this. Sans, I need to tell you, make you feel weird about that night you got raped.
And you're like, whoa!
And then it's, like, choosing that one. It's like, why did you choose everything you could have said to your sister... about all the stuff you know. Why did you choose that?
It's like we have this heartfelt moment of them reuniting, and it's just like, you've destroyed it all, Brad.
I think I am very, 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 very weary that I think as some of the Stark children start coming back together, mm-hmm. that their interactions with each other are not going to be whole. It's going to be very much like, hey, I've seen some stuff.
Look at Arya finding Nymeria again. I mean, Jon getting back with Sansa and them butting heads right away. All of the Stark kids have gone their own direction.
Yeah, they've seen things in their life, so yes,
and
it's going to be changed.
People, I mean, Sansa is so affected by Littlefinger. Jon's so affected by his Night Watch and Hardhome experience and stuff like that. So of course they're going to have these different perspectives on what's the priority right now.
Yeah you got to think, like, what's it going? Like, what is Arya going? Like. Arya, we already know, she's now on her way back to the universe.
Yeah.
What is she going to do once she sees Sansa with Littlefinger at that point?
I had read, a lot of people are like they think maybe Arya is actually going to be angry at Sansa for not.
I probably
for
would
still,
too.
For still being a part of like why are you why is he here?
Yeah,
like I mean we don't know exactly how much Arya knows about how all that situation played out, mm-hmm. which, you know, so. I'm looking forward to. Do we want to talk about how we think the season's going to roll? Do we want to go into that at all?
We went into a little bit last time. My overall arch was at first when the Night's Watch when the Whites and the White Walkers come in, they're just going to the wall's going to get blown up.
Yeah.
I think some big spectacle is going to happen with the wall. Like, it's going to crumble in some way.
Yeah, they could either take down the wall, or they could, or it could go to the East Watch by the Sea Tower, where Sandor and the Flames saw mm-hmm. that there might be an attack there. That could be another. So yeah, but no, I agree. I think at the end of the season, I think it'd be good for the show if at the end of the season the White Walkers invade Westeros.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where this is heading. I don't know how that's going to happen, but I think that's a cool place for the season to end, to pick up the final season of the show, right?
Yeah.
The final seven episodes of, or eight episodes, six? Is it six?
I thought it was seven.
Seven, okay.
I'm
sure. Final seven episodes.
I'll have to check.
I'm super excited with the show. I think it's great. I think that now that the book has been officially delayed at least one other year, it's like the show's gonna be done before the Winds of Winter even comes out, so Dream of Spring is probably
we have to start saying our goodbyes on the show right now, because mm-hmm. you know that as they've started off, and you know you're never gonna see probably Melisandre, we'll see, and then I thought Ellaria got a really interesting and horrible goodbye.
We haven't talked about So Tyene, right? That was the daughter that has just been poisoned,
mm-hmm.
and is probably going to die an awful, terrible death in front of her mother. That's not fun. There's nothing fun about that.
And just watching your daughter, like, just, and it's just even more cruel that they can't touch in any way, that they get stopped right before they can do anything.
And you know, I know a lot of people talking that, like, you know, her death and her daughter's death are not 100% unjustifiable.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. Says, like, you kind of deserve this fate.
In terms of what they did, they, you know, they killed Marcella, right?
Yeah, it's like this was an innocent girl.
Who was a complete innocent.
Yeah.
Who was under their protection, and they killed her in front of her parents, or in front of one of her parents.
Yeah, it's like, you're not clean from this death.
Yeah, so
as dynamic as Ellaria and Oberyn were, they had plenty of faults.
Yeah, you have some sins to pay for at this point. Okay, then, finally, moving away from Game of Thrones... Who wants to go work for their government to protect this planet?
I feel like I'm not so far from being qualified to
apparently you cannot apply. I was reading this further. They said, as a condition of employment, male applicants born after December 31st, 1959 must certify that they have registered with a selective service system. It does not seem that females are included in this posting.
I can't be NASA's planetary officer.
No, he said, you can't be the commander of XCOM.
I think it's saying just that if you are male, you had to have registered, not that, right?
That makes sense.
The way of reading this,
that you are not eligible if you never registered for the draft something, but since women were never required. Okay, I feel a lot better. I'm back to close to being possible to be the NASA's Planetary Protection Officer, a job that is actually posted on USAJobs.gov.
Yes.
It pays all right.
And it pays
pretty good.
All you have to have is like 24 hours of like science credits in college.
It seems like it says, it seems with something it
does business calc count as a science credit?
It's like how are your XCOM skills like in case like the worst like the worst comes to worst and we get invaded by aliens.
He's like,
you need to research these things.
I
feel like a newspaper editor is uniquely qualified. We make split second decisions.
Yes, we do.
Very important, and so I feel like I've got the skills of a Star Trek officer or Marvel some of the Marvel superheroes that can actually step into this role.
Yeah. Okay, but as this, I would say, if this role ever gets filled, as technology expands, would anyone want to be the first to go to space? In this capacity, I would say I do not. I don't want to have to go to space until all the kinks are worked out.
I think it would be cool to die not on Earth.
This is a desk job.
Yeah, it's a desk job.
I'm gonna take his bait on this and say
I'm thinking 20 years in the future.
If I had the opportunity,
we'll have space colonies.
To not die on Earth, to die like on Mars or in space. I think that'd be kind of cool.
I'd like to go out like John Hurt in Contact. You know, put me in the space station to prolong the cancer and the. You don't know John Hurt was that guy?
I know.
I forget his actual character name, sorry.
So if there's anyone out there that probably wants to protect us from the mysteries of space, there's a job open for you at your...
Is there any work experience
required? Please copy Prairie Nerds at TulsaWorld.com with your job application so that we may determine your qualifications ourselves.
And we can give you a recommendation.
Yes. Yeah, we'll happy to write a letter of reference.
Yes.
I'll call 1-800-NASA.
Which, just like it says, like, U.S. citizenship is required. Qualified NASA term employees who have term conversion eligibility under the NASA Flexibility Act of 2004 will be referred and considered equally with other NASA employees.
This is one of those things. They got an internal applicant they already want.
He says, we know who we want for this.
Don't feel bad if you don't get an interview.
Air quotes around hiring open.
And they said, like, this job is open to, they say, the public, U.S. citizens, nationals, and those who owe allegiance to the U.S. and expected service employees.
You're saying those who
planetary
owe
protection
loans.
Officer, but yes. You will be wearing red, white, and blue.
Yes. Senior executive, any U.S. citizen who meets the 5 executive corps qualifications includes senior executive service positions.
Cool.
So it seems like you kind of already have to be inside the government itself to...
I wonder if Jim Bridenstine will.
Oh, Oklahoma's known. He's protecting the planet. Well, I believe that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Prairie Nerd Podcast. You can follow us online at facebook.com/prairienerds, on Twitter at Prairie Nerds, and check out our blog at TulsaWorld.com/prairienerds. I have been Chris Moore.
Anna Cotudi.
Jonathan Ainley.
Stay nerdy, everyone.